Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, December the 1st. And today we're going to look at the life of President George H.W. Bush. I will call him Bush 41 because I always get the initials mixed up. Bush 41, who passed away last night in Houston. I learned about it early this morning. And we'll be chatting with our pal George Rodriguez down in South Texas. George has a great perspective on anything having to do with the Reagan and Bush administrations because he was in Washington working with the federal government during that time. So we'll get his memories and his thoughts on the life of this amazing man. I wanted to share this very quickly before we put George on the air with us. Just a couple of things about this rather amazing life. You know, I was thinking that I voted for a Bush in 6 of 7 elections, starting in 1980, 84, 88, 92, 2000, and 2004. So in 6 of 7 elections in American history, there was a Bush on the ticket. That's pretty incredible, historically speaking. Roosevelt was in 5, and Nixon was in 5. But that's pretty remarkable. Also, as a father, President Bush attended his son's inauguration. I'm pretty sure that John Adams did not go to John Quincy Adams' inauguration, which would have been in March of 1825. Mr. Adams back then was pretty ill, so I don't think he attended it. So that's pretty historic on its own. He's also the first vice president in something like 130 years to win election following a two-term president. Nixon couldn't do it. Humphrey couldn't do it. Gore couldn't do it, and others. So this was not easy. And I guess we'll save the romantic post for last. He and Mrs. Bush celebrated 73 years of marriage in early 2018. So quite a life. Let me say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. George, how are you today?
Real good. How are you? It's a beautiful day down here. It's one of those Chamber of Commerce days.
Well, I don't know what we call it up here, but it's probably Chamber of Commerce too, because it's lovely. I mean, it's just absolutely lovely to live on a day like this. What a beautiful, absolutely beautiful day. Well, George, I wanted to touch base with you. You were the first person that I thought about in doing this program about the life and times of Bush 41. And it's because, of course, of your own time and experience with both the Reagan and Bush administrations. But before we get into those kinds of details, when I think of President Bush, Bush 41, I think of a president, and I think of a gentleman. This is something about this man that was just unbelievably nice, George.
I agree. The first words that that come to me when I've been asked to describe President Bush 41, as you say, is the term gentleman. Someone who was of the ages of that period, because not only was he a gentleman, he was also someone who had experienced life as a young man in ways that many young men today wouldn't even know how to handle.
Right.
How to handle. He was a World War II. He was in World War II at the age of 20. He was a pilot getting shot at the age of 20. He was, although he was born, I remember the famous comment, the speech that Ann Richards made about him being born with a silver spoon in his mouth and mocking him. And, that really, really wasn't the case, although he might have been born into a wealthy family. His wealth was not given to him. He worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Eli Rodriguez, who lived in Dallas, who was a Dallasite, knew Mr. Bush when he was in when he first ran for Congress way back in 1970, and they were close buddies all the way through until Bush 43 became president. Mm-hmm. And the thing that kept coming to my mind every time that I crossed paths with him was how much of a gentleman he was, and how he was so he was not someone who seemed to hold grudges openly. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He never let on if his feelings were hurt. He certainly never let that on, and on the contrary, he was always willing to work and mediate, on a situation with somebody who had offended him.
That's right. No, it's an amazing description you just gave of him, because very similar to mine, even though the only time that I met him was in June of 1988, before the convention that year. He came to Dallas, and I was, active. And so I got a phone call saying, hey, would you like to come down and see Vice President Bush? I don't remember where he was speaking at. So I said, of course. And then they called me a few hours later and said, hey, look, would you like to have a picture with him? And I said, well, of course, yes. So I went down, and, we went in to see the speech. And, you're familiar with it. I mean, the speech, you're familiar with the security. And then for the photo, you're familiar with how that works. So I go in. And, these photos are rather fast because, obviously, he's on a tight schedule. But when I get to Mr. Bush, I walk to him. First of all, he's a lot taller than people realize he is.
Oh, yeah.
And, I think he must be 6'4 or something. He's not a – Reagan was a lot shorter than him. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I get next to Mr. Bush, and something happens with the camera. The photographer just needs an extra second to take our photo. So I say to him after, how are you, Mr. Vice President? Oh, great, great. I said, oh, I'm from Cuba. And I think he knew that from the notes he had gotten. And then I said, Mr. Vice President, I understand you're a big baseball fan. And he said, yes, I am. Big, big baseball fan. And I said, well, so am I. And I said, who's your favorite pitcher there in Houston? And he said, well, of course, Nolan Ryan. Who else? And so we kind of went, back and forth on that. Probably took 90 seconds, 2 minutes, and then the photograph was taken. And I've always cherished that photograph so much. But, what I was saying about him, too, is that, when you stand back, this afternoon I stood back and I realized I had voted for him in 4 consecutive presidential elections, 2 for vice president, 2 for president, George. I mean, that's not something you do every day. I mean, Roosevelt, I suppose, people who voted for Roosevelt 4 times can say that, but certainly not me. I've never. And then, a Bush 6 out of 7 elections, that's even more, even more remarkable in itself. But one thing I'll add to your comments about Bush being a gentleman, George. I think that, you and I are of the same generation. Our fathers were probably very similar. They were both of that generation. These were tough guys. They understood that life was hard, but they also, there was a certain grace, and they were gentlemen in how they treated people. And that's, that's how I remember my father, and that's, I think, how I remember President Bush, George.
Yeah, he was of a different generation, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was shown very, very clearly when he lost his presidency to Clinton, and how gracious he was afterwards. And even in later years, he was Clinton. Bill Clinton has made the comment that Bush 41 became almost like a surrogate daddy to him. And I found that, some people found that to be shocking and stunned, but I certainly can see how that would happen, because he just is not, his disposition was very much of one of being a gentleman, of being a good sport, of being someone who would forgive and forget if the other person was willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was just, you know, he was someone of a genteel era. Certainly,
Right. Certainly
not the kind of politician that we would expect at a Kavanaugh hearing nowadays. Yeah.
No. You're exactly right. He was just a different man altogether. You mentioned the experience in his life, you know, when he was shot down. And I've read that the Navy pilots at that time, their two biggest fears were getting shot down and killed. But even worse than that was, you know, being eaten by a shark, because that was the real fear. If you're in that water, that was the real fear that, there was one or two sharks that would attack you. And he was out there in that water for quite some time. And I've often wondered, you know, what an experience like that will do to you. You know, what kind of a mental, what does it do to you mentally to know that you could have been attacked by a shark and you would have been, you know, another one of the many missing in action that are in any war. Nobody would have ever known what happened to you other than you were shot and you would have been assumed to have been killed, you know, as so many others. So, you know, an experience like that has to really shape your life. And one of the things that irritated me most, I mean, it drove me crazy, George, back in 88 when Mr. Bush was running. One of the things, when he was running for president, one of the things that would really just set me explode is when people would refer to him as a wimp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you remember that,
And they would do that, yes. And they would do that because of his genteel disposition. That's
exactly.
That was the only reason why they did that, because of his genteel disposition.
Right. Because he came across as a nice guy, and that was, you know, somehow, you know, by some people, I guess, that was seen as being
as
bit wimpy.
Weakness. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there saying, how many of you who are accusing this man? I got into it one time with a fellow Republican. That was the sad thing about it. But a fellow Republican back in 88 who referred to him as a wimp. And I said, wait a minute, you can disagree with this guy. A wimp? A guy was in the water. And my friend didn't know that about his – I mean, he felt very stupid after I pointed out to him that he'd been shot down, you know. My friend said, well, you know, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I didn't know that about his life. And I said, well, yes, this is a guy who was in the water in the Pacific and you know, he wasn't killed crashing, but he could have been eaten, you know, destroyed by a shark. And so that was the thing about his life that the one thing about the criticism of him that would really – makes me explode. Something else, too, and you mentioned it, George, the way he handled himself after the presidency. You may remember that Clinton had a few problems in his second term. I'm sure you remember that.
You
remember those problems?
I'm not sure exactly what we're doing.
Yeah,
you're
not exactly sure, but I'm sure you remember a couple of those. At the time, President Reagan was no longer doing any public interviews, so Bush 41 and Ford and Carter, I guess, to some extent, but I remember more Bush 41 and Ford. They were both constantly being approached for a comment about the impeachment process or the impeachment proceedings, and they always say, no, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the guy in the White House. And I just thought that was so classy, George. I'm sure you remember that as well when you think about Bush 41, how classy he was with his successor. And believe me, I'm sure there were probably times when he wished he could have said a few things about his successor, George.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, the situation could not have gotten more dicey for a former president and then the current president behaving the way he did with an intern. I mean, it was just, you know, there was so much that he could have said, but he didn't. There was so much that he could have said, but he didn't. The other thing, the other situation is the way that, you know, he handled the aftermath of that. I mean, while it was going on, I mean, of course, he was being asked. The aftermath of it, how he, again, didn't say anything. I mean, the situation, you know, he could have said other stuff. His family could have said stuff. You know, particularly with the situation with, you know, what Hillary was feeling or what could have been said or, you know, what the family, what the impact on the family was, all of that stuff. Nothing, nothing, complete silence, which is, again,
right.
a tribute not only to him, but to how his family, how he raised his kids, how he raised his
mm-hmm.
family. I mean,
that's
you know,
right.
and Barbara, you know, it was the situation. I mean, we couldn't finish talking enough. We couldn't
right.
talk enough about it, about how Hillary must be feeling, about, you know, what the impact is on their private life. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
there could have been a lot of discussion, but he didn't. He was
right.
an absolute gentleman.
He
an
was.
Absolute
and
gentleman.
He really, you know, he knew that he could have probably, I mean, had he, for example, in the late 90s, in the middle of the Lewinsky scandal and impeachment and all of that, he could have become very popular with our side. If he had taken a couple of shots at President Clinton, just like President Obama took some shots at President Trump in this last campaign. I mean, a lot of
That's
Democrats
right. well,
were cheering
that. Well,
he's
still taking
that.
Shots at him. He's
That's
still taking
right.
shots even now.
That's
you know?
Exactly right. And yet, you know, President Bush 41 said, no, I'm not going to do that because that's not what an ex-president does.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And I just think he was so much, there was so much class that that I also remember that, the class of this man. I remember the night that he lost the presidency to Bill Clinton, and the day after, and for several days after. I will say one thing. We'll take a break, and then we'll talk a little bit about the convention, the 1980 convention, because there's an interesting story that you want to share. But, you know, one thing that I'll remember, there's two things about Bush 41 that I'll always remember. When I learned that President Reagan had been shot, and for a while there, we really didn't know if he was going to make it, as you remember. It was a rough day, a rough evening. He survived, but for a while there, we weren't sure how serious it was. And I remember thinking about it at the time and said, oh, God, thank God for George Bush. You know, because if he had to become president, I felt that he was fully qualified. The other time that I had a similar thought like that was the night that we were driving home, and late that night I learned about the military coup against Gorbachev. And I said to myself, man, are we lucky that we have Bush in the White House? You know, you didn't know what was going to happen, but you felt so comfortable that the steady hand of Bush was on the wheel. So those two times, I just cannot forget that. My reaction saying, man, am I happy that George Bush is vice president that afternoon that we almost lost Reagan. And then that evening into the early morning when something could have happened in the Kremlin and there could have been a war or whatever. And
exactly.
I was happy that we had that steady hand in the White House. I don't know if you remember those two incidents, but I
oh,
certainly
yes,
do, George.
Definitely. Well, let me share another one with you. Was at the height of the Iraqi War,
mm-hmm.
Or not the Iraqi War, the Kuwaiti War.
Yes.
When Iraq started shooting Scud missiles at Jerusalem.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, oh my gosh, you know,
here we
what
go.
Is Israel going to do? What is Israel? You know, how quickly is Israel going to retaliate, and then what will the Saudis do? What will
mm-hmm.
everybody else do? You know, and again, his coolness, and I've got to feel that it was his understanding of international affairs, having
mm-hmm.
worked with the CIA and having been in China. You know, I just thought to myself, well. He'll know what to do.
Right. Well,
and we did.
It's interesting.
And we got out
and
of
no,
that.
It's interesting you bring that up because from what I understand from history and reading about what happened, I recall that evening completely because, you know, Israel had maintained itself. It had sort of taken a neutral position, but they had also said, look, if you hit us, we're going to hit you back.
Exactly.
And if Israel had, in fact, retaliated, that would have changed the whole coalition.
Exactly.
That would have blown apart the coalition. So I remember that night and later reading that it was Mr. Bush who basically said to the Israeli government, look, I've got your back. Please don't get involved.
Right.
I got your back. And
exactly.
and again, once again, we saw a wonderful disposition of leadership.
Well, and he was a man of his word. That's why you could believe him. He was a man of his word.
That's
it. He was honest.
Absolutely, a man of his word. That's about it. That's about as good as you can say about any man. I don't care whether you're president or anybody. A man of his word. That's as good as it gets. George, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the 1980 convention and that very interesting situation in Detroit.
This is Carlos Guerrero-Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information right under the show description. We also have a link for my friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer here in Texas. So if you're looking for a car, call Duke. If you want to go out and hear some nice music, check where Carlos is playing, and I think you're going to love the music as well as the food. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez. I guess, George, the good and the bad news. The bad news is that we remember the 1980 convention. That makes us a couple of oldies here in at the time. But I remember that convention quite well because, you know, I was supporting President Reagan, or, well, at the time, Governor Reagan. And by the time we got to Detroit, which was in middle of July, I mean, he had the nomination. It was just a matter of taking the vote. But the real suspense, who's going to be vice president? That was the real suspense. And,
right.
And there was all kinds of talk. I mean, there was all kinds of talk. Remember, there was also talk about a woman as vice president. There was some talk about that. There was talk about Senator Laxalt from Nevada. There was other names, too. Senator Baker from Tennessee. I remember his name was being talked about. You know, Jack Kemp, who at the time was a congressman from New York. I mean, all kinds of people who were being talked about, George Bush as well. And I remember, you know, in all of this, you know, all of the speculation that was going on in Detroit for about 48 hours or so, that I kept thinking to myself, you know, I think Bush may be the best guy here because he may be the one that balances the ticket more. And also, this guy has a lot of foreign policy experience that Reagan will need. And, well, that's eventually he was picked, but it wasn't easy, George, as you were sharing this morning with me.
No, in fact, I got to meet Mr. Bush. I got to meet Bush 41 in 1970, of all times. You can imagine, you know, that's really, I mean, you know, we're talking about 1980 as being old guys. Imagine 1970, because my cousin.
That's
Eli,
the year that
Robert,
the Beatles broke up, George.
Can you imagine? Gosh.
That,
well,
that,
you know,
puts us out. That's the year the Beatles broke up.
Who are the Beatles, you know?
That's right. Yeah, that was the year that the Beatles Beatles broke up that year, so that really dates us.
That dates us. My cousin Eli was very close friends with Mr. Bush, with Bush 41, and he was involved to a certain degree with the with Hispanic Republicans, but he was also involved in the oil industry to a certain degree, and so he got to meet him. And when he decided to run for Congress, my cousin was involved, so I got to meet him at that point, because at that time the congressional district that covered San Antonio that we lived in went all the way, if you can imagine, all the way from Odessa to San Antonio, and then points a little bit further east as well. And it was an immense place, and he was doing the mandatory visits and everything else. So I had gotten to meet him at that point. And I remember, again, the words that we'll probably use over and over again, how much of a gentleman he was. It struck me at that point, even as though I was, you know, I was only 16 years old, and I thought, wow, you know, this guy really, really is a nice guy. And So crossing paths with him again in 1980, you know, I also thought, you know, he would be a nice guy, but it was a very ruckus. It was a very, very ruckus convention, if you recall, and
yes.
there were a lot of emotions, a lot of emotions.
Yes, there were. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Rockefeller folks and the Ford people were very, very adamant that, you know, they had to get somebody that was going to be strong, and they had to get somebody that was going to counter Reagan, because he was just too emotional. He didn't know what he was doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, when the name finally surfaced regarding Mr. Bush, I thought exactly just like you, you know, this is a good compromise, because this guy
yes.
knows, this guy knows how to handle himself.
Right.
He really, truly did. I mean, he handled
mm-hmm.
himself
he did.
Beautifully in resolving the schism. And I do believe, I will use that, you know, there was a huge gap between
mm-hmm.
the moderate and conservative wings of the Republican Party. And he
right.
did fantastic in bringing them together.
He did.
Really, really, really did.
No,
and
he did.
When
and
it was
in
all
fact,
said and done, it was a unified party. When it was all said and done,
it was a unified party. I agree with you 100%. Of course, again, dating ourselves a little bit, going back to 76, you remember, man, we're really dating ourselves today, George, but that's okay. That's, as someone used to say, that's the fun part of getting old. You remember more things, but anyway, going back to 76, I'm sure you remember that convention. I remember watching it on television. And that was the convention, of course, between that really divided the party. Whether it cost Mr. Ford, President Ford, the election, I don't know if I go that far. But because when he left the convention, he was 30 points down, and he almost won. So obviously
yeah, right.
something happened to help him. But I remember in that convention that there were two very strong elements, very tough competition. And I think that the party by 1980, there were many people running. Another thing that people forget, too, is how many people were running in 1980. You had not just yet Bob Dole. You had Senator Baker. You had the governor of Texas who was running.
It was wide open. I mean, it was
It was wide open, yeah.
Yeah, Connolly.
Connolly, right, who had switched parties
right.
at that
mm-hmm.
time. He was not in public office at that time, but he had switched parties. And so you had Connolly, you had Reagan, you had Bush, you had Baker, you had Jack Kemp, I believe, who was running too. So there was a pretty impressive group of people, actually, who were running. It was not just a bunch of people. They were pretty impressive. But by the convention time, they were all kind of united around Reagan, except the vice presidency. And you're right. When Bush was selected, I think that kind of settled everything. And then the focus was on Carter. Now, I don't remember Bush doing a lot of campaigning. He did obviously campaign, but I think he kept a low profile, if I remember, in 1980, George.
No, but as I recall, his role was
mm-hmm.
more to calm the water behind the scenes. He
mm-hmm.
did a lot of meetings. He did a lot of meetings with folks who had hurt feelings. Who were big donors and had a lot of influence in states like New York and you know, the Northeast, the Iron Belt. That he really did a good job in bringing in those folks, the Romneys, Governor Romney, Mitt's daddy. Was still around and was very, very popular at that time in the North. So he really did a great job in compromising, in reaching folks who in calming the water, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think another thing that we've got to remember is that he followed William Colby in the CIA. This is another one that
yes.
I can't remember because I was just an intern in '75. And
mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, the everything that had happened under Nixon in the FBI and the CIA and all the turmoil and everything else. And again, he came in to the CIA and cleaned it up. And, I mean,
mm-hmm.
he really, really cleaned it up. He just served from 76 to 77, but he cleaned it up. I mean, he did.
Right.
Again, he restored integrity and honesty to the place. And I mean, that's how he operated when he was working the campaign for Mr. Reagan. I mean, that's what we asked him to do, and that's what he did. I mean, Reagan, you know, when asked, well, what was the difference in the personalities between Reagan and Bush? Well, Mr. Bush was a gentleman. He would walk into a room and, you know, he commanded respect because of who he was. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Mr. Reagan would walk into the room and he was the star. He was used to being a movie star. It was like he was walking onto a stage. And, you know, he didn't necessarily expect it, but, you know, his behavior was that of, you know, look at me, listen to mm-hmm. me. We're going to do a scene now.
Right.
And it was very, very much that way. Same thing, the difference between Barbara and Nancy. Barbara was very much a supportive, loving mother and wife, very, very protective of the family. Nancy, again, she was a movie star.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I think that's, you're very right about that. They had different...
She protected the president. She protected Mr. Reagan. And that's it. She was a supporting star, but you better be supporting. You better be, you know, doing what you're supposed to do to support him.
Yes, no, I think you're exactly right.
I mean, they were not your typical rich, wealthy people that you would expect for them to be honored or feel that you have to honor them or kowtow to them just because they enter a room. On the contrary, they were just gentle people, genteel, but respectable. I mean, very, very honorable.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. I think that you're exactly, your description is exactly right. Well, I was thinking that he's going to be buried at the at the A&M Library, I believe, because that's where Mrs. Bush was buried earlier this year. So that's where the resting place will be. That library is something I recommend to a lot of people because when you walk into that library, there is so much history there. I have seen it, and it's just an absolutely amazing place to visit. So I think there may be a lot more interest now in his life and his presidency now that he's passed away. But overall, George, I look at this man and I say officer, you know, president and a gentleman. And now I think a lot of people, let me just say this last thing here. A lot of people are going to use the fact that he was a gentleman to beat up on Trump. You know what I mean? They're going to I wish we had Bush back. I don't know where those people were in 1992 when they were all beating up Bush. But, all those media people who are suddenly in love with him, where were you in 92, people?
Well, again, the story. One of the stories that I shared with the reporter that I spoke to earlier was the story of when he was talking to a couple of folks, and a reporter overheard him describing his grandkids, and he referred to George P. as the little brown one. Do you recall that? He referred
absolutely,
to George P.
That got
as
everybody
the little
excited.
Brown one.
got everybody excited.
And there was a meltdown. The Hispanic media, in particular, had a meltdown. Right. The media just, you know, how can you say that? Isn't that racist? My gosh. And, in fact, my understanding was that the press people, because I wasn't working in the White House at that point, but the press people that I knew that were working there, they were keeping him and Barbara away from the press for almost a week because they were afraid that they were going to tell them off, that they were going to go off the deep end on them, because they were so offended that someone might think that they were being offensive towards their own kids.
Right.
And, you know, it was just not that way. On the other hand, I think that, you know, if you say something even, you know, condescending about the Trump kids, and Mr. Trump is going to come at you, you know, with a bazooka. And
right,
I think
exactly.
That, I think it's sad, but it's a sign of the times. It's
right.
No,
I agree.
Times.
Look, and no one has criticized President Trump more than I have for picking too many fights. I think that Trump's problem is that he picks a fight with everybody. Even if you shoot him from 6,000 miles away with a BB gun, he gets into a fight with you, which I think it's a mistake, honestly, because a president only has so much ammunition, so you want to use it correctly. But but I do think that President, he was a different time, different era. That's a generation that unfortunately we're losing fast.
Yeah,
because so many of them. But I just think that that's a generation that where men were gentlemen. I'm not saying they were perfect men, but they were gentlemen.
No, they were gentlemen.
And
that's true.
They were gentlemen. And I think that that's something that, well, I'm not sure we're teaching our young people.
It's lost.
Yeah,
that's,
I think so.
True.
Because, you know, when you spend hours in the Pacific Ocean thinking that at a heartbeat a shark could attack you. Yeah, and I'm sitting there saying, I wonder what he would think about some clown at a university who needs space because he cannot deal with somebody else's point of view. And it's just like, you know, you're just like sitting here going, you know, what's happened? I mean, here's a guy that was he 18 years old? He registered in the Navy when he was 18, younger than most of these kids in college today who are basically.
He was in the water when he was 20. He was in the water when he was 20.
That's right. And
just
again,
him and
I emphasize he and sharks. That's it. And you know, just think of what that must have been. That must have been like. I mean, he didn't know that he was going to be rescued. I mean, a lot of those guys, unfortunately, were lost in the water like that because they drowned or they were injured.
Well, in some cases, they were rescued
swim.
By the Japanese.
In some cases.
That
that's right. So, I mean, it was not a pretty situation. And yet he overcame that and we know the rest of the story. Well, George, I want to thank you for your time. I know that, like me, you know, you have a lot of respect for Bush 41. I've always had a lot of respect for the family. And one thing I'll say about President Trump, I thought he was super gracious today in how he handled the death of President Bush. I thought his remarks, the tweet that he put out, his public remarks, I thought he was just super gracious, and I have to congratulate him for that, George.
Yeah, I think it was the proper thing to say at the proper time.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. And so, anyway, George, thank you as always for your time. We'll get back to the political fights the next time. But for now, let's just all remember a great man, President Bush 41.
Yes. Let's rest in the afterglow of a man who has given us so much history and who has given us so much in character. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I was just thinking another little trivia thing. He was born when Coolidge was president, and he died when Trump was president. That's just an interesting detail. An interesting detail about this man's life. Have a wonderful day, George.
Enjoy
that Chamber of Commerce temperature there in San Antonio.
It's gorgeous. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, my friend. George Rodriguez, our good friend in South Texas. We usually talk politics with George, but today we talk a little bit about the history of President George H.W. Bush. I always get the initials messed up. That's why I always say Bush 41. Great man. Great man. A president and a gentleman. That's how I've always referred to him. Just an absolutely great human being and a great man. And I think with time, I think people will appreciate more his presidency. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.